All right, so I'm back here. Took a couple weeks off. As I mentioned many times before, actually, is really don't like looking at a screen too much, especially because I'm working on my computer so much during the week. So last weekend, I pretty much stayed away from my computer or most devices. But I'm back here. I'm gonna try to, as I always say, try to get these out weekly and keep them shorter, maybe, to maintain my motivation, we'll say. But yeah, for those of you who don't know me, my name is Chris Kowalczyk. I am an ESL teacher here in Southern California in the LA and Orange County area. I've been teaching English to non-native speakers since about 2007. So we're coming on about 18 years now. It's April, almost April 2025. So yeah, wow, almost 20 years of teaching English. I cannot believe it. For those of you, this podcast, of course, is geared mostly towards my current and former students. But if you don't know me, I actually never really meant to become an English teacher. It was originally just a job I took so that I can go to Japan and, get some easy work. But yeah, after about 3 or 4 months, I think I realized that I really enjoyed it, and I still wasn't sure if I would do it as a career, long-term career. But yeah, just keep doing it. So I think I'll keep doing this until I retire. And as my students know, I really love teaching. I even did it as a volunteer work for about a year when I took some time off of work. So anyway, again, for those of you who are new to this, I'm not here to really teach English per se. This is more about my experiences as an English teacher and also as a language learner of Japanese, and also as someone who lived abroad for about 6 years in Japan. And so I try to kind of relate that experience, give my thoughts and opinions on language learning and teaching as well. So today's topic is a little academic, a little linguistic, a little historical. Something I talk about sometimes in class. Sometimes I do a special lesson about this. Maybe I should do that soon. The semester is almost over. So I think I should do one lesson at least. I try to do it at least once per semester. So the history of English, okay? So students often ask, or they're often frustrated with spelling in English and the grammar and the pronunciation. It doesn't match the spelling and so on. And there's just a lot of vocabulary as well. A lot more vocabulary, I think, than in other languages. English has one of the largest, I think, vocabularies of all the languages. So I thought I'd talk a little bit about why that's the case, and weave in my own opinions and thoughts as it relates to language learning and teaching. So, of course, let's start with the country of England, right? So, English, of course, comes from England, but not exactly. Okay, so here's the deal. You have to forget about the current countries and border situation. We have to go back over probably over 2,000 years. And you have to remember the world looked very different in terms of people and borders, and there were no countries, there really were no nations as we see them today. So let's go to England about 2,000 years ago. So there is no country called England. I mean, there is an island called Britain or Britannia, and then of course there's a little island next to it, or a smaller island called Ireland, or it had a different name back then. I believe it was called Hibernia. So you have Hibernia and Britannia, this pair of islands off the coast of Europe. And the people there were called Celts. Now, they weren't a unified people, of course. There were all these different groups of Celts. But basically, they spoke some variation of the Celtic language family. Nothing like English. It's really, there are no similarities. So you have the Roman Empire, of course, over in Rome. But they're expanding, right? They're moving into the area that we call France now, Gaul. They're moving into Germania, which is the area we call Germany. And so they keep going and going until they cross the channel, English Channel. They cross the water and get into England. Or I shouldn't say England, Britain, right? Because Britain is just an island. And so they meet these Celts, and they speak different languages, totally different languages, okay? And they do take over for about maybe 300, 400 years. I'm not sure exactly, but the Romans are there in Britain, so of course they're starting to influence the local people, their language and culture, and so on, right? And of course, we have Scotland all the way in the north. I believe that was called, what was the name for that? Alba, maybe? Alba or Albion? Anyway, that part, the Scottish part, was not under Roman control. They kind of stayed away from there. And then you have the Romans leaving in about 400 or 500 AD, because the Roman Empire was basically falling apart little by little. And then you have other peoples coming again across the channel, across the English Channel, across that water, and little by little influencing the people in Britain, mixing with them and so on. So you've got basically German language speaking peoples, which is very close actually. If you look at the distance between England and like Amsterdam in the Netherlands, it's really close, okay? Like super close. I believe it's a 1 hour flight. It's really close to there. So you've got people from that area and they're speaking German languages and they're crossing. And again, they're mixing and influencing. And these are the Anglo-Saxons, but of course, it's a lot of different groups of people, but they are speaking Germanic languages, right? Then you've got the Vikings, who again are a large group of people. It's not just one country. But they're also speaking Germanic languages, although these are North German languages. English is more related to the West German languages. So you've got these Vikings, Norway, Sweden, Denmark, and so on. Again, these countries didn't really exist back then. And they're also controlling, fighting, taking over, mixing, trading, doing business, marrying, right, with the people in Britain. Again, Scotland is kind of that northern part of Britain is kind of out of the picture for the most part. But yeah, you've got these Vikings mixing with them, and again, they're leaving their language imprint as well. And then you've got that going on. And then I believe in about 1066, you've got what's called the Norman invasion. So the Normans were, as it's very complicated, but you have the area called France today, right? But of course, there was no country called France. There's a bunch of different people speaking, I believe, what are called Gallo-Romanic languages, which are, yes, they're related to Latin, which is why French and Italian and Spanish and Portuguese have some similarities or a lot of similarities, but they're still very different from Latin. And so these peoples, in the northwestern part, in the area called Normandy, which is again very close to England or Britain, it's like, I don't know, maybe 50 or 60 miles away. It's just right across the English Channel, right across the water. You've got these Vikings who settled there, and they were called the Northmen because they were from the north, of course. And then slowly that became the word Norman. And so, yes, they are speaking French, but it's not just French, right? It's a certain type of French. You got to remember, there is no French language as just one language, right? You've got all these different kinds of French. They're all related somehow, but they're still very different. And these people go across. Again, it's a long history I'm not going to get into, but basically, these Norman language speaking peoples, which are very similar to what we call France today, they invade England or Britain. And basically, they kind of take over. It's not exactly that way, but basically, they're in control. So you've got about 200 years of this French influence, specifically Norman French. Again, there's a lot of different varieties of French, and so they're influencing the language, they're influencing the culture, and so on. And this, I believe, is where you get a really big shift. Again, this can be you can talk for months and years about the history of the English language, but I feel a lot of people, I think, also feel that there's a big shift during this time. And so you start getting two or three words for the same thing in English. So you wonder why the word pig is the animal, but the word pork is the food, right, of a pig. You have the word cow, which is when the animal's alive, I guess. And then we call the meat beef, right? We have chicken, and then we have poultry, right? Now, I know they're not one to one exactly the same, but you start seeing this a lot in the English language where we're getting two or three words for the same thing. We're starting to get a lot more Latin-based words, okay? It's not quite that simple, but just to give you the general idea. So English used to be quite different before the French influence, the Norman French influence. It's constantly changing, like all languages, but there's quite different. So you get words, again, like I said, two or three words for the same thing or something similar. I'm trying to think of any other examples. I'll think of them later. So we have a lot more like medical words, diplomatic words, and so on. So anyway, so that's to kind of give you the idea. And eventually, those Norman-speaking people are kicked out, and England or Britain becomes its own thing, right? They're in control again. The English people are in control again. But again, it's not pure English, right? Because what does that mean? It's already the language has already changed. Languages are always changing, right? But basically, we have the development of what we now call England, right? Little by little. And then, of course, we have Scotland in the north. We do have other peoples or cultures or languages still in Britain. We have the Welsh in the western part, which is a totally different language. They're speaking one of those original Celtic languages. We have the Cornish people in Cornwall in the southwest. They're speaking a Celtic language. And of course, we have the Irish in the island of Ireland. And they're speaking a totally different language. But then that's a whole different story. So then we have about 1,000 years or so of maybe 800 years of what we would now call today English. So what does this mean, right? Well, let's look at pronunciation, first of all. So we have to think again about the history of the English language and pronunciation, right? Pronunciation does not stay the same throughout history. Pronunciation can come down to the individual person. Pronunciation comes down to the different areas, right? If you just think about your home country, you go to a different town, you go to a different city, you go to a different state, north, south, east, west, people are going to speak differently in general. And then each individual can also speak differently as well. So, of course, you have the same thing in English. You have a ton of regional variations throughout history. Now, which one is the correct pronunciation? Well, that depends on who's in power, right? And again, I think this is the same for any country. Who's in power can often determine which language or which pronunciation or which regional variation is considered the standard one, right? So, I'm trying to think of the history of Japan. And I believe the center of power shifted throughout history in Japan. I believe the center of power used to be more in the west, like in the Kyoto or Osaka area, and that was where the capital was. And then I believe it eventually shifted towards the east, what we now call Tokyo today, which Tokyo is a relatively new city, maybe just 400, 500 years old compared to Nara or Kyoto or that Osaka area, which was a lot older, over 1,000 years. So we see again, what is the correct, quote unquote, correct pronunciation shifting? And spelling was kind of a problem too, because you have people using the same alphabet, but they're spelling words the way that they speak them in their area. So this was a big thing in English where we see books from that time, maybe 1,000 years ago. But the spelling kind of is weird because it's only matching that local pronunciation. So maybe a book from Northern England, the spelling is going to be different than books in Southern England, maybe like the London area, just because the way they pronounce things are different. So there's no standardization of spelling as well. We've got another problem with spelling because often once you spell a word and you put it in a book, it may stay that way, even though the pronunciation is going to change over 1,000 years. So we have words like knight, like Knight, which doesn't make any sense, right? Because we pronounce it knight. But at one time it was probably Knut, right? So Knight, Knut, slowly becomes the word knight. The spelling, unfortunately, has not changed. Same with like knife, Knife. Could have maybe a long time ago it was knife, now it's knife, but the spelling doesn't change. We have words like night. Again, like night, like evening, Night. If you look at the German word, it's Nacht or Nacht, right? In English, became night. Unfortunately, the spelling has not changed. Sing, S-I-N-G, sing, okay? Well, I believe, for my research, similar Germanic languages, it used to be the word singen, singen. But now it's just sing, but it's maintained that spelling of S-I-N-G. So we got a lot of these crazy things happening, right? We've got PH, meaning F, right? Like my own name, Christopher. We've got influences from Greek, which has a different spelling system. Latin, again, Norman French. Even Celtic languages, the Germanic languages, and different Germanic languages too, not just one part of that German-speaking area, but we've got Northern German, Western German. Man, it's crazy. I mean, English just has so many different influences, right? Like a lot of languages do. But yeah, English is particularly difficult. Now, what does this mean for you as an English learner, someone who's studying English, right? I want you to remember that all languages change. I know a lot of students get frustrated because English doesn't feel like, hey, what are the rules for pronunciation? Why do people speak differently? You know, why is the spelling not match the pronunciation? Why are there so many words to mean the same thing? And the thing you have to remember is it's just that's the way languages are. Now, I know some languages don't change as much as other languages or haven't changed as much. For example, Japanese, which is my second language, it has changed a lot, of course, especially with the modern, in the modern age, but, you know, compared to English, it has not changed as much, I'm sure. And of course, that's because Japan was mostly isolated for a long time, right? Of course, there were influences from China, and that's where Japan gets its writing from, of course, and a lot of the vocabulary came with that as well. I'm not sure how much Korean influence there was in the Japanese language. But my understanding is that a lot of things came from China, but also through Korea. So, you know, there's a lot of that happening. But still, compared to English, not a lot of influence, all right? Or not a lot of changes, until recently, of course. So I just want you to remember that. If you feel frustrated, you just have to understand the reasons why these things are happening. There is a reason. It's not completely random, okay? Standardization of languages. Now, I know some people would wish, that English would just have like one set of rules and a simpler pronunciation and everyone speak the same way, you know, but speak like the teacher or speak like the textbook. But you have to remember that standardization is artificial, right? It's not normal, right? People don't all follow the same rules, especially in Now, even if we go to England, right, or Britain, well, let's just call it England. Even England, not including Scotland, okay? Even though that's a pretty small area, smaller than California, you still have a lot of variation in pronunciation, okay? And that's totally normal, okay? Standardization is artificial. That's what happens when you have a strong central government making rules, you have standardized education, you have everybody watching Hollywood movies or listening to the radio where they're speaking the standard English, I guess you could say. But even then, even with media, you still have a lot of like local news channels where people speak with their own local variety of English. Now, the thing is, I noticed though that in the US, you have a lot of local news stations where they will speak the local dialect or accent or whatever. But I think from my experience in Japan, I don't think they do that with local news. I think, I could be wrong, but I think the local news in Japan, even if it's Northern Japan or Southern Japan or Western Japan, I gotta check, but I think a lot of times they do use the standard Tokyo dialect or neutral dialect, which is interesting. I have a feeling that China probably does the same thing, even though Chinese has so many different accents and dialects and different types of Chinese and so on, Cantonese, Mandarin, Hokkien or Fujianese or whatever, right? Shanghainese. I have a feeling that in China, they use a standard dialect. I could be wrong, but again, now things get political, right? So anyway, I just want you to keep that in mind as well, that standardization is relatively recent, maybe the last 100, 200 years or so. and especially with, you know, more media available around the globe, but also that it is artificial. Okay, it's a political thing as part of it as well. So I'd like you to also look at your own history of your own first language. I'm going to talk about European languages. I've already talked about Japanese and Chinese a little bit, but if you look at Spanish, French, Italian, and German, I mean, they were so different from each other because, you know, they developed over 2,000 years or so, but they're so different. Even within what you would call, let's say, a country called France, right? Now, for a long time, there was no France. It was just a lot of different groups of people speaking similar or somewhat related languages. But you had a variety of things that where people couldn't understand each other in the south and the north and different parts, right? One of my favorite movies is called Kingdom of Heaven, and it's about the Crusades and, you know, about 1,000 years ago. So, but it's about a French knight who goes to Jerusalem to fight in the Crusades. Anyway, that's not really the point here. The point is, there's a song in the movie, and it's not French, actually. I believe it's in the language of Provençal. Could be spelling that, pronouncing that wrong. But that's a southern French language, and it's actually very different from French. I mean, there's some similarities, but to me, just from my ear, it didn't sound French. And apparently, that language of Provençal in southern France, which is no longer spoken, or very, very small group of people speak it, that is related to, I think, a Spanish language. I think it's related to Andalusian, but I could be wrong. So what we see today as Spanish and French and Italian, and you have to remember, these are standardizations of, and there really isn't one language if we go back like 200 years, or even 100 years ago, people were still couldn't understand each other a lot of times. And what we have is a flattening. But again, this is very artificial. Sicily in Italy, right? For a long time, Sicily was its own country, basically, for, you know, I don't know, 1,000 years or so. Even today, people still speak the Sicilian language, although a lot of people, it's usually the older generation. German was the same way. You know, Germany as a country is only about 150, 170 years old. I believe 1871 is when Germany became a country. It was a lot of little different countries and kingdoms and so on. Speaking is some type of a German language, of course, but very different. Southern German compared to Northern German and so on. I've actually done some research on different, especially like a German around the Berlin area in northern Germany, and then German as spoken in southern Germany and Austria is very different. Even though I don't speak German at all, really, just listening to them talk, looking at the vocabulary, it's very, very different. The pronunciation of words and so on. So, anyway, you can look at your own history of your first language as well. I mentioned Japanese. I mean, for even today, Japanese in different parts of Japan is very, very different. Does that mean it's wrong? I don't think so, in my opinion. Of course, a standard version of the language is helpful, especially for like news broadcasts and textbooks and, you know, media and so on. But, you know, it doesn't mean that the local varieties are wrong. You know, and a lot of it, again, depends on where the power is, the central government and so on. Chinese is another huge example. I mean, honestly, people from different parts of China often can't understand each other even today. And so again, this is the history of English, as I've mentioned. Of course, it is unique to Britain or Britain's history, what's happened there, but something similar, you know, happens around the world. Okay. All right, I think that's about it. So yeah, again, always think about, you know, language, and I've said this a million times in class. But language is not static. Language is changing. Language is alive. Language is dynamic. You can even see it today. Maybe pronunciation hasn't changed too much over the last 20, 30, 40 years, but we're seeing a lot more vocabulary that's changing. And even the words, so we're getting new vocabulary, but even the words we already have, the meaning and the nuance have changed. And I guess maybe I can leave it at that last point, is that a lot of words we use today, if you go back 100 years and use those same words, they could have different meanings, or the nuance or the way that you use them could be very different, right? I'm not going to go into too many examples. I mean, even the word handsome, right? I mean, handsome, people used to use that for women, a handsome woman. A lot of you are familiar with the word gay, right? I mean, if you listen to some of the older songs, we'll have a gay old time. We're having it's a very gay party, right? And you think, well, what, that's very strange. Why would they say that, right? Well, it used to mean happy or merry, right? Lively, things like that. So, pants and trousers, and pants in one country means underwear, and pants in the US mean, like jeans or khakis or chinos or something like that, slacks. So, yeah, history of English has a lot to do with why English today is so frustrating for English learners. But it's going to continue changing. And if you look at your own language history, the history of your own language, first language anyway, I think you'll see a lot of similar things happening. So I guess that's about it. I hope that was helpful. What I'll do is I'll put some links maybe to some videos that could help you understand this better with some visuals. But hopefully my explanation as well kind of gave you the general overview. It's something I'm very passionate about. I believe the history of languages is something that everybody should study to understand why their own language is the way it is. But yeah, so I'll stop there. I'm thinking for the next topic, maybe I'll do confidence versus ability, which is a big problem for a lot of students who I feel like more students usually have less confidence than their actual ability, whereas we do see some people whose confidence is actually higher than their ability to use English, but that can be a good thing as well, because I can encourage you to use it more. But I think the typical issue is students have less confidence in their ability, or they underestimate their ability. And so maybe I'll talk about that in the next episode.